I would like to take approximately a half hour this evening to address a question which without doubt has been in the back of our minds for some time, and especially as a result of the visit to the United States this past week of the first Slav Pope in the history of the Roman Catholic Church. And that is, we should examine this evening some of those things which we might have taken for granted, may not have really understood in the background of the history, the contemporary events, and as we have defined it, the restoration of the Roman Empire, which has been overlooked in modern history. With the presence of this remarkable figure, the first pope who comes from a country behind the Iron Curtain, we are introduced to a matter that those of you who are older perhaps never gave a thought to, and those of us who are younger in this congregation were never really told about. You may have lived through the experiences of the Second World War. You may even have fought in the Second World War or had sons and or daughters who were involved in military service. But did you really understand what occurred in Europe between the end of the First World War and 1945? Most of you know two figures that represent powers in Europe. The names Benito Mussolini or Adolf Hitler would stand in prominence. Yet few of us know what each of these men actually represented in their own minds and in the understanding of the people who lived in especially two countries, Germany and Italy, and the role of the Roman Catholic Church at that time, and hence the role of a political power that is shaping up as a result of the economic common market and the growing influence on the political scene of this remarkable figure, John Paul II. Let me take you back to the 1920s. It was at the beginning of the 1920s that Italy was suffering the consequences of victory in the First World War. She had been promised, as a member of the Allies, certain territories that her friends did not give her. And as a result of internal strife within the country, under the king, a man came to prominence and became, in a sense, the prime minister, and he was Benito Mussolini. As a result of his efforts, there was born a restoration of the Roman Empire in the Mediterranean world. This restoration included a little country that you might know as Albania today. It included Ethiopia, which is now essentially in communist hands. It included that portion of Ethiopia now in rebellion, which we used to call Eritrea. And it included Libya and certain islands in the Mediterranean. Now, most of us do not realize that this organization was understood by the Italian people, by the Emperor Victor Emmanuel, and by Benito Mussolini as a restoration of the Roman Empire in the Mediterranean. At this time, there was also a concordat arranged with the Vatican, this is 1929, before the full restoration of this imperial system in the 1930s. The Roman Catholic Church played a very significant role in the growth of Italy and the growth of the Roman Empire in the Mediterranean world. North of the Alps, if you please, in a country that was the majority Protestant but with a significant impact of Catholicism, there was a party born under the influence of an Austrian who came to Germany named Adolf Hitler. This party conceived of the idea that there should be a return to ancient pagan Germanic principles, and the power of the Nazi Party created an empire north of the Alps called the Third Reich, or the Third Restoration of a Roman system in the German world north of the Alps, governed out of Berlin, whereas a restoration of the same system south of the Alps in the Mediterranean was governed from Rome. The Roman Catholic Church did not dominate Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany sought to dominate the church. And there were ambivalent feelings. One had to come to a conclusion that Nazism was, in fact, a 20th century revival of many of the traditions that go back to ancient German practices 2,000 years ago. What we learn from this, that I want you to take note of this evening, is that in the 1920s was born a restoration of the Roman Empire that grew to its fullness in the 30s in the Mediterranean world. And a second restoration, coming a little later, beginning in 1933, among the German nations, restored the empire north of the Alps. This is the great mountain chain that separates the Mediterranean world of Italy and adjoining countries slightly to east and west from the Germanic north. Two empires coexisted, if you please, in Europe at the same time. We in the United States often addressed it as an axis, a recognition that it was a Rome-Berlin axis, but we did not fully grasp that there were, in fact, two separate restorations of the Roman Empire in Europe essentially at the same time. This we should have expected because it is the story of Europe for the previous many centuries, from the time of the Roman Empire till into the 1940s. Those of you who have read the book of Daniel will note in chapter 2 that the king of Babylon in the days of Daniel in the 6th century B.C., at the very beginning, had a dream in which he saw the sequence of major human political events in the symbol of a human figure. We will skip for the moment the head of gold, which was Babylon, or the area of the shoulders and chest, which was Persia, or Iran, or the area of the stomach region, which was Greece, and we go to the legs, which was Rome. Now note that in this system, uniquely, there were two legs. Any human being in normal figure in the image of God has two legs and 2 feet, 5 toes on each foot. We should know, therefore, that just as the Roman Empire had its eastern and western divisions, the eastern with a capital at Constantinople, modern Istanbul, the west had a capital initially at Rome, later it was Ravenna, the ancient Roman Empire was divided east and west. It was strong as iron. It was succeeded by restorations in Western and Eastern Europe that sometimes shift not west to east, but north and south. We have explained Revelation 17, Daniel 7, and Daniel 2 without ever fully clarifying what it is we have said on one particular point. Thus, you know from Daniel 7, and you should have read this many times in our literature and in the Bible itself, that there were to be a series of restorations of the Roman Empire. You know that there were, in fact, to be 10 such restorations, that 3 were to be uprooted at the time of the rise to political power of the Catholic Church in Italy. Those three were the non-Catholic tribes that invaded Western Europe: Ostrogoths, Heruli, Vandals. And we have discussed the restorations that followed. We have said that there were five restorations, beginning with Justinian, ending with Napoleon. You had the time of Justinian's restoration of the realm in 554 in the west. Charlemagne's in 800 on Christmas Day. And then the Germanic house. Then the Habsburgs from Austria. Then Napoleon. And we've mentioned, of course, Hitler and Mussolini. Well, what we have never actually focused on, either in written form or in discussion, that I want to address tonight because it is very important with respect to the visit of John Paul II and the direction of political events in Europe and across the Atlantic. Mr. Armstrong is aware, but none of us have ever addressed the fact that when we said there were 10 restorations, of which three horns, you remember, were uprooted in Daniel 7, and there were seven more which were to follow, and a woman in Revelation 17 rides on a creature, a wild beast, with seven heads, and there are finally 10 horns, this, brethren, is what we never explained, that I want to explain now before we go any further. The restorations we told you about are the restorations of one part of the Roman system. There were two legs. The deadly wound was struck in Rome. It was not struck in Constantinople. Therefore, we have really only discussed from Daniel chapter 7 or Revelation chapter 17 only one half of the Roman system, not the other half. One leg, not the other leg. Now, let me clarify. The Roman Empire was restored in the West in 554. It was a restoration in the West over which the bishops at Rome exercised significant authority politically in a way that they never did prior to this time. There was at the same time the eastern half of the empire continuing, which never had a deadly wound. We call it after a peninsula on which the city Constantinople, modern Istanbul, was built. We call it Byzantium. The Arabs called it the Kingdom of Rum, R-U-M, which was a continuation of the, you know, the word we know as R-O-M-E, Rome. When we say Justinian restored the empire in the West, we have not explained that the eastern half was continuing. Is that clear? There would never have been a restoration in the West if the empire had ceased in the East. It was because there was still an empire in the East that survived the barbarian invasions that the emperor in the East was able to subdue the West and restore a Western division, because the old Roman Empire, before the barbarians came, had an eastern and a western capital and were administrated separately. Now perhaps you are beginning to understand what I have in the back of my mind. The restoration in the West collapsed over the centuries, but it continued in the East. The Roman Catholic Church politically never dominated Constantinople. The Roman Catholic Church dominated the West. If we draw the analogy of a religious power that rules the restorations of the Roman Empire, we are talking only of the restorations that essentially were in the West, not in the East. I want you to take note of that. The woman does not ride the restorations, or, let me use another phrase, does not ride politically over the political structure that is the continuity of the Eastern Roman Empire. Later on, 800 AD, there was the need of restoring the empire in the West once more. The Roman Catholic Church did dominate this restoration. Politically, the Pope came to crown Charlemagne. In the East, the Greek Orthodox dominated religiously the people, but the emperor was in charge. In every case, the church was subject to the state in the East. In the West, the state was dominated by the church. The Roman Catholic Church never dominated the Eastern Roman Empire. Therefore, the restorations which the Roman Catholic Church has dominated are a sequence pertaining to the West, looking at it as you would look at a map of the Mediterranean. Byzantium continued. There was the need, after the realm of Charlemagne came apart, to restore the Roman Empire, and in 962 it was restored once more in the West. The Eastern Roman Empire had its emperors dominating over the Greek Orthodox Church. You see, there was one leg of the image of Daniel 2 that continued but was never dominated by the church in the West. We have never clarified this point in terms of what it meant in the Second World War and what it means today. Because today we are looking at a restoration of the common market, and we are yet to discover, shall I say, the toes on the other leg. But before I go any further, let us go back to our story. While the Eastern Roman Empire continued like one of the legs and the feet, in the West, you now have a restoration. Under Justinian, you have another one. Under Charlemagne, another one. Under the Germans, founded in this case in 962 by Otto the Great. And it came apart in 1254. There was the need of restoring a Roman Empire in the West once more. And in 1273, it was restored again through a dynasty that we call the Habsburgs. The Roman Catholic Church dominated Justinian's realm, dominated the restoration of Charlemagne, dominated the Germanic realm, and dominated the Habsburgs. It never did have a chance ever to dominate the East, where the emperor was in complete control. That system continued in the West till the throne was passed to Napoleon at the beginning of the 19th century. The Byzantine Empire in 1453 was finally overrun by the Turks. The Habsburgs dominated their hereditary territories and also what we call the Holy Roman Empire, which did not include much of the Habsburg hereditary territory of Austria-Hungary. Now, what I want you to take note is that when Napoleon made a deal, so to speak, with the Habsburgs continued their imperial control and had a relationship with the Roman Catholic Church. But when Napoleon came on the scene, he not only was not dominated by the bishop at Rome, when the bishop at Rome came, or was to come to have him crowned officially, he in fact seized him and in illness dragged the Pope to his presence, took the crown from him, and put it on his own head. The French realm was never really dominated by the Roman Catholic Church during the time of Napoleon. But there was such an arrangement still with the Austrian Empire, which acknowledged it now played a... Things changed in the middle of that century. And there was a restoration which we never took note of significantly, though it is clearly identified in Revelation 18. There are five restorations in Revelation 17, I should say. In Revelation 17, there are five restorations which, when this prophecy is revealed clearly to the church to be made known to the world, five such restorations from Justinian through Napoleon have fallen. Now, we are told that one is, and it was made known at the time when that one did exist, the period of Hitler and Mussolini, and one is yet to come. Yet the one to come would appear to be seven, but is also called the eighth. You ever notice that? In Revelation chapter 17, the beast that was and is not, that last revival, it's an eighth one. But it in fact belongs to the seven on which the woman sat. That's because in the sequence, we have not clearly defined the fact that there was a restoration in Europe of the Roman Empire on which the woman did not sit, which was the Protestant-Prussian restoration in 1871 to 1918. This is what the Germans called the Second Reich, the Second Germanic Restoration. The first Germanic Restoration was by Otto. The next Germanic Restoration was a Protestant Restoration. The woman did not sit on this. It, in fact, is not one of the seven on which the woman sits. And as a result of that, the last one is not really the seventh, it's an eighth. Because there was a Protestant restoration of the Roman Empire under the Prussians in Germany that climaxed in the First World War. And at the same time, there was still the descendants of the Habsburgs ruling in Vienna. Napoleon had gone. The Habsburgs remained. The Prussians had come and gone, and the Habsburgs also disappeared. So, clearly, you have a situation that finally the beast is like one that was and is not and shall come. It doesn't continue any longer in any way. There was no eastern, no western, no northern, no southern realm. In 1918, it was all over. And then we have a restoration on which, shall we say, the woman did dominate in Italy, but not in Germany. Most people have failed to grasp this fact, that the German system was essentially a pagan one. It came to some terms that Adolf Hitler, though a child of the church, never acknowledged its authority over him. In 1945, we see the end of Nazi Germany, and already Italy had fallen. Let us then take a look at the state of affairs. Let's recapitulate and have a picture. There is an image in Daniel 2. There is a beast in Daniel 7 and another beast in Revelation 17. All of these are stories viewed from different points of view. Daniel 2 is the story of the picture of an image in the shape of a man, because the governments we are dealing with are human governments. Now, there is a spirit power that influences these human governments. That we are not addressing for the moment. Human beings, nevertheless, are fundamental in characterizing this system. It is originating not of God, but of man. And of course, when it is destroyed, in Daniel chapter 2, a great stone which represents Jesus Christ, the King, and the kingdom of God, smashes that image, and the dust particles are blown away so that nothing remains of human government as we have had. But in chapter 7 of Daniel is the same story, but now looking at the attitude of mind, instead of seeing men or an image of man, we have wild animals. Because the rulers of these nations have often had the minds of wild animals. That is, they think of conquest, devouring, taking from someone else. Revelation 17 is the story of a part of that fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7. Revelation 17 is just the story of the fourth beast of Daniel 7 after the deadly wound was healed. That you should have known from our literature. I am taking this for granted because it is important that either you read it if you have not, or you recall it and make it a working part of your thinking. But we are leading now to the crux of the problem. We have the Roman Catholic Church dominated by, persecuted by the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire falls. There are three barbarian restorations in the West, all of which are non-Catholic. We call them Arians because they follow the teachings of Dr. Arius, A-R-I-U-S. He was a man who did not believe that Jesus Christ was a member of the God family. The Roman Catholic Church, of course, had another view, not only that he was a member of the God family, but that the Holy Spirit is a person in that family, and there have been and never will be other than three members in that family, and that is the doctrine of the Trinity. But what we discover is that throughout history, there was a restoration of the Roman Empire, one head after another, that the woman dominated, and at the same time, there was also the continuity of the same political system over which the woman did not dominate. There were two legs, remember. And as Mr. Armstrong has said on private occasions without ever addressing it in a public way, we really have only told half the story when we tell the story of what happened after the deadly wound was administered to the Roman Empire in the West. The Catholic Church dominated. I'll repeat again, the restoration in the West under Justinian and Charlemagne and the Germanic Ottos and succeeding German emperors. Then they dominated the Habsburgs during the time of the Roman Empire centering in Germany. They still dominated over the Habsburgs at the time Napoleon came on the scene. But the Pope was a prisoner of Napoleon. Napoleon was not the prisoner of the Pope. Hitler persecuted Roman Catholics as he persecuted communists, Jews, gypsies, Protestants. Anybody who stood in the way of the restoration of a kind of neo-paganism. But the church dominated Italy. There was a concordat in 1929. And in between the time of Napoleon and the time of Mussolini, there was a power. While the church had relations with Austria, there was a restoration of the Roman Empire that was the Protestant restoration of the German Kaisers that led to the First World War, over which the Roman Catholic Church did not dominate. The man who created that empire, if you please, for the German-Prussian emperors was Bismarck, who entered into what was called in Germany a Kulturkampf. That is a struggle of culture between German Protestantism and Catholicism in Germany and in the Latin area of Europe. It led to a draw, so to speak. Now, when you stop to think about this, what we are saying today is that if most of you who are older live through the experiences of the First and Second World War, you will note uniquely a German and an Austrian empire side by side, linked together. You will note that one was Protestant, one was Catholic in the First World War. The woman sat on one but not the other. You will note that in the Second World War, the Concordat was made with Italy in 1929. And neo-paganism reigned in a restoration of the Roman Empire north of the Alps. But Hitler and Mussolini joined together. I have been looking at only half the story. when we have looked at the common market. This is where we are today. Do you know that when you look at the image of Daniel 2, there are 10 toes? Mr. Armstrong has concluded for many years, quarter of a century, that those 10 toes would seem clearly to be the same 10 powers referred to in Revelation chapter 17. They are not the 10 long restorations, but the 10 powers that make up the final restoration. There's no indication that the 10 toes have 3 chopped off, so there are only 7 left, which would be the story if they represented the long historic restoration from Justinian till now, where 3 were uprooted, you remember, in Daniel 7. They seem all to be there, all 10 at the end, when Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God replaces that image. Therefore, his conclusion correctly would indicate that those 10 represent a final 10 in power. But the 10 toes are on 2 feet. 5 on the one, 5 on the other. They're not 10 toes on 1 foot. There are 2 feet. There were 2 legs. There have never been restorations of the Roman Empire, but what? There have been 2 at the same time. When Charlemagne reigned, there was an emperor in the east, not dominated by the bishop at Rome. There were governors in the west when Justinian ruled in the east. In the west, the church dominated. The church dominated the Habsburgs, the very Catholic dynasty. Napoleon treated the Pope with disdain. In fact, he was so ill he died from the trip when Napoleon decided to take the crown and make himself an emperor. What we are saying is that it is inevitable, when we look at the map of Europe, the story of the transatlantic alliance, that we see in Europe today only one part of the story. We have been focusing in on the common market. First started with 6. Then it has 9. It is an economic market. It is not yet essentially political. If we understand Daniel 4 and Daniel 5, we would inevitably come to the conclusion that a 2,520-year period lies between the fall of Babylon in 539 B.C., prior to the arrival of a political structure in 1982, 2,520 years later. You add 539 and 1982, and you have 2,521, but there's no year zero. You subtract 1, that's 2,520. This has been laid out in articles before. We used to think that that would bring the end of the Gentile rule. Rather, the implication is that Babylon couldn't arise before then. Did you hear that clearly? We used to think that 2,520 years was the length of time that God allowed to the Gentiles, preceded by 3.5 years of tribulation and the day of the Lord. Whereas, if we really understood the story clearly, and I would correct what I've said or written on this subject, 2,520 years was to pass while that tree stump of Daniel 4 was cut down, which meant there was no restoration of the final prophetic Babylon of Jeremiah and of Isaiah and of Revelation until 2,520 years have elapsed, which is the reason why there is no political Babylon in control in Europe today in 1979 and is not about to be in 80 or 81. Because 2,520 years are not up. And furthermore, when a power does come politically to the scene, it does not mean that the 10 who have power give their power to the beast even then. But at some time they contribute their power to a man who finally dominates over the whole system like Nebuchadnezzar did. But let us go one step further. What we see today is a unique situation that does not represent how the political events will ultimately work out. We have today in Western Europe a common market of 9 nations to which Greece has been added. No economic system has ever been able of itself naturally to generate political power without some external force, either economic or military. East of this 9, or common market, lies a group of nations behind a figurative iron curtain. We call it the Comecon, those nations linked under communism. They include Poland, and Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria. They do not include Yugoslavia. East of that, of course, is the Soviet Union, an atheistic state. Across the Atlantic is a major power that acts as an umbrella for Europe. It is the United States, linked with Canada, and the NATO military nations, which include nations not in the common market and nations in the common market. Now, there are two great voices in Europe. The voice of Franz Josef Strauss in terms of unification, and the voice of Otto of Habsburg in terms of unification. I want you to know that Otto of Habsburg says Europe can only be united if it is united on the one thing that holds the people together, which is religion. Franz Josef Strauss says Europe united still can never stand alone unless it is linked equally with transatlantic United States and Canada. Now, that's what we know. That there are two men who see, one, that Europe must be united and significantly on a religious basis, and another, who, though we would agree in part with that, sees that it can never survive without, at this time, a link across the Atlantic, like a giant human colossus stretched across the Atlantic with one foot on North America, the other foot in Western Europe. Now, either Strauss's alternative is going to work, which has not been the likely view and would not be if the crisis at the close is very near, because this nation is far removed from such a political kind of thinking. But on the other hand, in my judgment, Strauss must not be written off when he says Western Europe alone cannot survive, even if religion links it together. Which brings up the question of a Slav Pope from Poland. Is it possible that, in fact, his momentous trip to Poland behind the Iron Curtain was a signal to the Catholic communities in Eastern Europe that they have not been forgotten, that instead of having a transatlantic Strauss view of a North America and a Europe, a politically Protestant-dominated North America, and an economic Europe where religion may be significant but is not fundamental, is it possible that the Pope is coming up with an idea that is partly in agreement with Strauss that Western Europe cannot survive alone, but instead of necessarily including North America in it, that we will discover the need of bringing the Comecon, or the nations of Eastern Europe, behind the Iron Curtain and west of the Soviet Union into an organization so that ultimately there are 10 basic Catholic powers in Europe, of which 5 will have a free enterprise system and 5 will essentially be communist socialist states, linked with one ruler, not like Hitler and Mussolini, one ruler like Nebuchadnezzar, an ultimate man. But in this case, ruling over a system made up of 10 powers, of which, in the end, 5 are not a part of the free enterprise system that we know of the common market, as the common market. Is it possible that such nations as Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary, Yugoslavia, Romania, I'm leaving out Bulgaria for reasons, since that is a non-Roman Catholic area, that in these areas you can have individuals who have essentially a communist philosophy, who at some time in the future will be linked as a unit with the West, with 2 separate economic views? As the Pope said, you can be Christians and not practice the same economic philosophy. And those linked together, the Eastern European nations shedding connections with the Soviet Union in part, and the West Europeans shedding connections with the United States and Canada and other smaller portions of NATO. This is where we stand. We stand today in 1979, well in advance of these things occurring. Nevertheless, we should be prepared to ask some basic questions, not to be hasty and draw conclusions before the time, since we have not had it defined for the Church as to when 6,000 years is up. But that, as Mr. Armstrong said in the introductory material in your feast brochure, we are in the last decade, plural. That means no less than 20 years. We're somewhere in the decades bringing to the conclusion this age in which we live, of man's rule. But is it possible that our view of how things will work out will be obscured as we go along by presumptions as to when it's all going to end? Because if it is going to end in 5 or 6 years from now, you cannot exclude the United States and Canada from this system. There is no way to restore what is found in Revelation 18 without including this country in a transatlantic colossus. But you give a few more years of erosion behind the Iron Curtain and between Europe and the United States, led by the ingenious influence of the first Slav Pope in history, who's a comparatively young man, 58. A man who could have 20 vigorous years or more ahead of him, because he's also an athlete. A man who could lead and speak, and who could so influence Europe East and West as to bring about a union that is now not thinkable, just dreamable. In which case, we would have 2 parts, just like we had Hitler and Mussolini, the Habsburgs and Napoleon, how we had the Habsburgs and Byzantium. The Habsburgs were only one. Then you had Byzantium and the Germans, you had Byzantium and Charlemagne, you had Byzantium in the East and West. I think that it is time at this Feast of Tabernacles for us to strike an important note that there are many things we have never really grasped in terms of the past, and a number of things in terms of the future that we should put question marks on, before we draw hasty conclusions and pin the label of beast or false prophet on one person or another. Because if Strauss's view is not right, Strauss is not the man. If Otto of Habsburg does not see the whole story of Europe, he may not be the man. We must not be hasty, but we must note that throughout history, there has never been a time when a restoration of the Roman Empire, if it collapsed in one area of Europe, was not accompanied at the same time by a continuity of the empire somewhere else. And the common market is only an economic beginning, not a political beginning. It is one entity, and we still have to look, if you please, for the other shoe to drop. We have never been looking for that because we have assumed all along, without reflecting on Daniel 2 or 7 or in Revelation, that the common market is one part only. And there has to be some other part if Daniel 2 is going to make sense and if the record of history will. The one thing will be that as with Justinian, as this series of restorations began with one basic ruler over two realms, east and west, so we will have in the end one ultimate ruler. But every evidence would appear that it will be two realms. And it is my judgment at this moment in time that if God should call a halt to the work of His church and say it is finished, we will have some very shocking things that must occur in the United States with a Catholic president that I do not think would be as likely to have a transatlantic alliance. More likely, there is going to be a major shakeup in Europe, and it is not going to happen tomorrow. And it is not going to happen in 1980 or 81, perhaps not even 82 for that matter there. But at some time down the line, the influence of this Slav Pope, as he is pleased to call himself, will shake loose the countries of Eastern Europe. And there will be a separate entity of governments that are essentially socialist communists and not free enterprise socialists. And I would perceive an ultimate link-up in the long range of the Comic-Con and the common market. And a great third power that fulfills Revelation 18, separate from the North American Colossus and the Colossus that is the Soviet Union. But it must be a power in Europe far greater than Western Europe alone can assemble. And at this point, Strauss is right. So I think it is important that in 1979, at a very time where the most significant pope in a generation is visiting this country, we remember where he is from and what he is saying and what he is not now saying. Because at this point, he must first put his own house in order before he can put Europe in order. And much needs to be done in that area of prophecy, just as, in a sense, much needs to be done by this work, because it is not yet finished. More can be said, more will be written in the plain truth, but I wanted to introduce you tonight to an area of thinking while you listen to the news and read the newspapers during this festival, of those things which perhaps we never saw clearly because we were focusing in only on what was happening in one part of Europe and neglected to tell you about the other, and never did define what was happening a generation and a half ago in Europe. And therefore, we have never been able clearly to see how much more must yet be done in Europe before a power is sufficient to stand up to East and West. It is not something that can happen overnight.